You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and today in partnership with the Food Standards Agency. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and I'm a writer and I specialize in food and science. Now, this podcast is really informative. It's all about the food safety regulation information that businesses need on the changes that will come into play when the UK leaves the EU on the 1st of January 2021. And this is specifically in relation to food and feed safety rules. Now, joining us to discuss this are a fantastic panel from the Food Standards Agency, starting with Amy Adkin. Can you all introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Amy Adkin, and I'm Head of Risk Assessment at the Food Standards Agency, and I lead the Risk Assessment Unit there.
And Phil?
Hi there, I'm Phil Flaherty. I head up the Risk Analysis and Trade Policy Unit.
And Mark?
Hi, I'm Mark Willis, and I work in the food policy team dealing with regulated products.
For those who aren't aware of the important role the FSA plays in food and drink, Amy, could you tell us about the agency? What does it do and why?
Yeah, sure. You may remember that back in the 1990s, there was a number of high-profile outbreaks of foodborne illness. And of course, there was the emergence of the zoonotic prion disease in cattle, which is BSE, or mad cow disease. And so we were established in the year 2000, in the April, and we're set up as a non-ministerial government department. And that means we're governed by board, as opposed to directly by ministers, which makes us rather more independent than most of the other departments. We have a remit to protect the public's health in relation to food, and that's across England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And so it's our job to use our expertise and influence to so that people can trust the food that they buy and that it's safe and it's honest. It says what it is, and people can believe that. So our focus is food safety, but also other consumer interests, including availability, environmental concerns, and animal welfare. And it's really important to understand that we're a science-based organisation. Our work is underpinned by the latest science and evidence, and we have a key aim to be transparent. It's one of our guiding principles to maintain public confidence. So we have open board meetings, and many of our scientific advisory meetings are also carried out in public.
And I think it's fair to say that that although the work that you do is sort of relatively behind the scenes, every single consumer comes across your work every day, pretty much with every packaged product that they come across, in terms of, you know, labeling regulations have to be adhered to, the product recalls, you know, food safety. So it is a really important agency. Now, let's turn to current events. So we leave the EU on the 1st of January 2021. Now, with the end of the transition period approaching, what does this mean for the FSA, Phil?
Hi there. Yeah. So, well, current food and feed safety rules are brought forward by the European Commission, and that's based on decisions that take into consideration the kind of safety and risk assessments that are carried out by the European Food Safety Authority. But at the end of the transition period, so from January 2021, it'll be the Food Standards Agency alongside Food Standards Scotland that'll be responsible for that process, with ministers, health ministers, taking the final decisions. So one thing that won't change, I think, at the end of the transition period are the current food and feed safety rules themselves, because the existing European law will move into UK law. But after that, if we need to change the rules and regulations to protect consumers or to support innovation, that's where we'll use the risk analysis process to give us the evidence basis for doing it.
And can you explain what risk analysis is? Why is this important to everyone?
In short, it's a process for estimating the risks to human health, finding ways to control those risks, and then telling people what the risks and controls are. So there's a stage where the science and evidence is pulled together, which is known as risk assessment. And then a separate stage where a proposal is generated using the evidence, which is known as risk management. And then ongoing transparency and consultation with industry, with interested parties throughout the process. And it's kind of fundamental to how you make evidence-based policy recommendations and advice. So we'll be using it to consider and manage issues that arise from a whole range of different areas, including, you know, the management of food safety risks, food and feed safety policy development, applications to bring a regulated product to the market, and requests for advice from other government departments, for example. So there's a huge range of things that get covered there, from the control of pathogens like COVID-19 or listeria to the control of allergens, right through to genetically modified feed authorizations and changes to legislation more broadly. And it's important to us not just because it provides a solid science and evidence basis for decision making, but it also plays an important role in the UK meeting its new international commitments as an independent trading nation. Because in future, the UK is going to have to notify the World Trade Organization and trading partners of new rules where they might affect trade. And basing our new rules on solid risk analysis based on, you know, international guidance and best practice, as we have done, will give the UK a really strong and credible evidence base when doing that.
So, Amy, what are the sorts of issues that are going to go through this risk analysis process? What things will you be looking at?
The trigger can be quite an immediate food safety risk. For example, you can have an incorrectly labelled food that contains an allergen, or the occurrence of contamination within one of our feed or food supply chains. And in these situations, we need to work very quickly to collate and link evidence together and assess the risk posed. And often this can be with other government departments, so that we can support actions if withdrawal or recall of food and feed from the market is needed. So those events are very fast moving and we have to work at pace to through that process. But at other times, it's a lot longer term. And so we have longer terms of work contributing probably more to strategic aims to improve overall safety of food and feed. This can be understanding different control measures in our food and feed chains, where we're trying to reduce the overall risk over longer time periods. But we also need to keep pace with the changing face of food and feed. Nothing stands still. And we need to think about the risks that occur from changes in the variety of foods that are coming to the market, but also how customers access food. You know, how is food delivered to our homes and who's delivering that food? There's also ways in which we change in how we cook or prepare our meals that we need to take into account to understand the safety aspects. And for those food and feed where there's a significant new or novel element, and that could be either in, you know, the parts they're made out from, or it could be the process that makes them. It could be domestically produced food or food being coming from abroad. But at the FSA, we have to assess the safety before placing them on the market.
And Mark, can you explain the whole system of the regulated products? What is a regulated product?
Yeah, well, there are various food and feed ingredients where it's established principle, and it's obviously coming with us from EU food law, that they must be evaluated and authorised before they can be used. This can be food additives that are regularly used, or novel food ingredients, or even GM food and feed. Currently, these are evaluated at European level by the European Commission and EFSA, but obviously from the 1st of January, these all need to be evaluated under UK risk analysis process, and we've put in place the various resources and procedures to manage this based on the principles we're inheriting, effectively. And we need to make sure we have this system in place so that innovation will work on the UK market, and where a food is deemed to be safe, it can find its route to market.
And Phil, what does this mean for existing food and feed safety rules?
So there's no immediate change. So we copy over the existing EU rules into UK law from the end of the transition period. But what will happen is, as we start looking at these issues in the future and as we get applications to place regulated products on the market, then we'll start putting things through the risk analysis process.
And so, Amy, when you're looking at a product or an issue with a product, what are the issues? What do you take into account? Is it just safety, or are there other factors?
It really depends on the exact regime and how the legislation has been written. You know, looking at the safety of a supplement is very different from a feed additive. One of the probably more complex examples is feed additives. And that's where the FSA has to carry out the assessment, not only of the safety for humans, of the eventual the animal product, But we also need to look at the safety of the animal, the livestock species that's being fed that feed additive, and the safety of workers who are involved in the manufacturing of that part and of using the feed additive on farm. And there's also all of the environmental safety assessments. And finally, the efficacy of that additive. Does it do what it says it does? For novel foods, we look at the production processes, and this can include the actual agricultural processes of producing that crop, and consider the specification stability of ingredients within that final food, anticipated exposures, so how much of that food is being consumed and by whom is that product being targeted at. There's also something called history of use, which we'll use to look at any data arising from where it's been previously consumed, and all of the toxicological data. So that's looking perhaps at knowledge of how the body deals with a substance, whether it's absorbed into the bloodstream or stored in fat, and also assessing allergenicity issues. So it's very difficult to come up with a straightforward list, because many of these product types are quite different. And therefore some can take a lot longer and others are far more straightforward.
And Phil, what else is important here?
The primary objective is of course public health and safety and well-being. But as Amy was just setting out, we do take into account wider issues as well. So there might be occasions when, for example, you're looking at wider consumer interests like animal welfare or the environment or the economic impact, or specifically the impact on trade perhaps, or just technical and feasibility considerations. And as Amy was setting out, it might not be applicable in all cases because, for example, with some regulated products, the additional evidence requirements are specified in the legislation. But it's always been the case in good policymaking. And as our stakeholders often tell us, understanding the complex environment in which you're operating is essential to developing a good proposal. And we fully intend to do that. And I think this really gets to the heart of what we're doing, which is around developing a transparent process where we'll be openly working across, other government departments and openly with stakeholders to keep people involved in what we're doing, to build up this evidence and to be clear about why we're putting forward recommendations to ministers and what that evidence is that supports those recommendations to ministers.
Now, Amy, your remit is expanding, but risk analysis has always been core to what the agency does. Can you give us an example of how it's been used or how it could be used?
Yes, of course. We've always used risk analysis at the FSA. It's aligned with the international rules that have been in place for many years now. And thinking of some examples, it's very difficult at the moment to get away from, the current pandemic. So we've obviously been involved with some work in this area. As you know, the pandemic, towards the end of December 2019, Chinese authorities notified that they'd seen an unusual case of pneumonia of unknown cause. But the first place that was associated with these cases was in a seafood market. So, of course, due to this being initially reported associated within a wet market, the FSA immediately undertook an assessment to look at whether there are any risks for UK consumers to receive potentially infectious doses through the food route. We took into consideration a lot of information, looking at, volumes of food imports from various parts of the world and looking at what was known about the actual transmission of the virus at that time. So this is looking at the beginning of in 2020. We had to highlight lots of key uncertainties at the beginning of that piece of work and looking at how we assess the risk in different stages. Given the significant gaps in the knowledge of the virus, we were looking at data as well that came from evidence of previously emerging related coronaviruses, such as those that cause SARS and MERS. And once we were completed, we first reviewed the assessment internally with our own experts at the FSA. And given the increasing significance of the virus by that point, we also selected members of our independent scientific advisory committees. So this one went to the Microbial Safety of Food Committee to review it. And in light of our commitment to transparency, of course, we then placed that reviewed risk assessment in the public domain. And the first version, I think, was released in the April of 2020 this year. So the assessment helped and supported the FSA to come to some decisions about the evidence that we were presenting, but also it provided a help to the food industry in making proportionate risk management decisions at the time. And we did receive positive feedback from industry about making it available at that early stage. So that's quite a recent example of how we used the risk analysis process and how we use risk assessment to put evidence, to collate it and to place it in the public domain.
So, Mark, what does this all mean for businesses in the UK and looking forward? What do they need to do?
Well, simply put, I mean, effectively, anything that's authorised at the EU level at the end of December, that will become part of UK law straight away. So currently permitted food additives, they'll continue to apply. But anything that changes after the 1st of January, applicants will need to put an application into us and allow us to evaluate that and then make a recommendation to ministers on whether to authorise that additive or that novel food based on the evidence and the recommendation from the risk assessment. We'll need to have applications submitted to us electronically via a new page and post-service we've got on our website. To make it easier, the applications will be effectively the same as those already submitted to the European Commission or EFSA. And we've set up a new process internally to manage the handling of those applications and to provide a single point of contact for applicants so they can ask any questions they may have and seek clarification at any stage of the application process.
Now, I'm on your FSA website at the moment, and I presume that to find that, you go onto the business guidance and then click the UK has left the EU and the information is there.
Exactly. At the moment, we've got some just general guidance about how you need to make your application and prepare the relevant information, all the technical detail to support why it's safe, and in particular for food additives, the technological need of why it's needed. We will be putting a link on towards the end of the year that will allow any applicant to click through and then answer a few simple questions to start with about what they're asking for and a little bit more information. They'll then get sent a secure link allowing them to quite simply upload all the relevant technical detail that we'll need to then consider their application and then make recommendations.
Fantastic. And Mark, is there anything specific that businesses need to know in relation to Northern Ireland?
Yeah. As a consequence of the Northern Ireland Protocol, any food and feed placed on the Northern Irish market, whether produced in Northern Ireland or elsewhere, will need to comply with EU regulations. So whilst we've been talking here about applications effectively to authorising GB going forward, anyone wanting to market a regulated product in Northern Ireland would need to continue to use the existing EU application process.
Now, Phil, it's a huge amount of information to take in, and thinking in terms of the next steps for businesses affected by the change, what do they need to do right now?
The key messages I'd like to get across are that, you know, public health remains the FSA's top priority in risk analysis, but we will also be considering the other legitimate factors where it's appropriate to do so. And that the food and feed safety decisions that require changes to legislation, such as for regulated products, will be taken by UK health ministers, except in Northern Ireland, of course, because of the Northern Ireland Protocol. And that transparency and consultation are absolutely key principles for what we're doing here. So we hold our board meetings in public, for example, as Amy was saying, and we'll be publishing, you know, the recommendations to ministers and the evidence that it's based on. And I think with that as the kind of background to this, I think what businesses should be considering is, as Mark said, you know, the application process, if you're looking at, you know, how to placing regulated products on the market after the transition periods, it'll be very similar to what they're used to in the EU, except of course the information needs to come to us rather than to the EU institutions. So we need to be thinking about engaging with the FSA on this and looking at the information currently on our website, which will be kept updated. And we will be publishing things like the full list of issues that we've got under consideration at any time. So that information will be on the website. So I'd very much encourage people to go and have a look.
Well, thank you so much to everyone. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. And this episode is in partnership with the Food Standards Agency. You heard from Amy Adkin, Phil Flaherty, Mark Willis, and me, Stephen Gates. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to apprenticeships. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.